for the lunch break on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
What's up? It's the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Hello, Painter.
My man.
Josh Vitale, the Montgomery Advertiser, the perfect Monday guest in studio with us. Hello, Josh.
Hello, guys.
So we hung out last night.
Yeah,
friends outside of the studio. Hey,
friends outside of the studio, contrary to popular belief.
I have friends.
Yes.
Surprising.
Yeah, Painter hosted us, Josh. Sarah had nothing to do with it.
Domestically carried the burden of this household.
Right. Really, really good time. Kicking off Thanksgiving week, Iron Bowl week, with a little relaxation. Some
you
good
had
food.
Concerns about a number of the dishes. About half.
Just
the,
one.
About
just one.
About half the group was Southern, born and raised. The other half.
Mm-hmm.
Northern heathens.
Yeah, actually, interestingly enough, most of you.
And then whatever you would consider Tom Green.
Tom is from.
Basically the north.
He's from south of here, but he's from the north.
Yes.
Miami, in case you were wondering.
Yes, Miami is the north.
But Josh, you came and
it's
you
like
brought,
a mixture of north, the north and Cuba.
You brought the essentials. Obviously, I did all the cooking for our household. Mm-hmm. We don't have to go over that. It's well known. Yeah. Sarah doesn't contribute anything there.
Yes, the one dish.
Cornbread.
Was cornbread because it was being made by somebody who is not from the South. And then immediately you start going, oh, wait, because I think there's different interpretations of cornbread, what it should taste like, what it should be.
In your mind, what should it be?
Cornbread should have some sweetness to it. It shouldn't be dry. It shouldn't be super.
The dryness
super,
is important to
super
me.
Crumbly. But other than that, I mean, I feel like I prefer something with some sweetness to it. Just it doesn't have to be overbearing, but just a good little sweetness to it.
And the person tasked with this was Gianna Hahn of AL.com, who,
yes.
To be fair,
did a really good job. I would give that cornbread a solid 8.5 out of 10.
That's a good grade.
That was a good grade.
Did you notice I just kept going back and eating bread?
Yeah, you did. You were hammering away.
It was delicious. It was good job, Gianna.
But we're here to talk about Thanksgiving food, but more importantly, the Iron Bowl.
Should we wring our hands with concern over the Samford game?
I think the least we talk about the Samford game, I think the better.
Yeah, my opinion is that game, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
We gained nothing from it.
Yep.
As reporters and analysts, we lost nothing from it. Nothing.
Time.
Nothing is different than last Friday.
You lost a Saturday.
I lost a Saturday, but I lose every Saturday to Auburn football. So
it was. I thought it was the perfect game for everything for it to happen.
I mean, for what? Yeah. I mean, but
are we all on the same page that we wish that this wasn't a thing in this month? Or Justin, are you more like, yeah, I'm okay with it because it's such a tough month for some teams?
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it.
I'm not fine with it.
I'd like it to not be. I'd like this game to be played earlier in the year. If they're going to do it.
I don't have a problem with like scheduling an in-state FCS team because these games fund those schools like athletic departments.
But if this game was SWAT with like the Kent State or the Tulane game, do you have a problem then?
I mean, my personal view is that Auburn should play 3 non-conference games and then 9 SEC games in a row to end the season.
Okay.
That's not shared by, you know, the SEC or probably Auburn or probably anybody.
Miles Law's a favorite.
Yeah, and Nick and Saban's been pretty.
But I don't think if you said Gus, oh, we get 9, you get 9 conference games, you have to play them 9 straight week or 9 in a row, he'd be like, hold on, I don't know about that.
But we know why not everybody's on board with that, right? Right, Josh.
Probably, but you say it.
Okay,
don't want to say that.
I think part of the reason is like not a lot of teams, but there are several teams in the SEC that have to take full advantage of their 4 non-conference games in order to get bowl eligibility.
Yeah.
And there are teams where their cap is probably going to be 2 or 3 conference wins a year. Like you were going to go most years, rather than not. If you play an 8-game conference schedule, most years teams like Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Kentucky, and then depending on the time of year, maybe Missouri or Tennessee, like or South Carolina, like somebody's got to finish with losing records in the SEC.
We've also learned that playing those nine conference games hasn't helped those conferences.
No.
I mean, you're asking Oregon to win nine straight conference games to go to the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
They lost one. They're not going to the playoff.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I like the symmetry of eight. I like four home, four away. You can it's an even number. You can balance it out a little bit easier. Apparently, last week, Jimbo Fisher mentioned in a press conference that the SEC has been talking about changing some things up because, of course, Georgia played Texas A&M on Saturday for the first time since A&M joined the league. That was all the way back in 2012. They hadn't played each other since in a regular season game since 1980, I think. And they were mentioning, okay, well, it's been so long for Georgia and Texas A&M to kind of cross paths. And Jimbo was mentioned, probably need to play more, maybe division. They're talking about getting rid of them and talking about doing some things like the pod system. And I feel like the pod, it's a whole lot easier to pull off when you have eight instead of nine conference games. But either way, I'm in favor of playing an FCS game. And I know a lot of teams aren't. And I know certain conferences have just struck it out all year. Like the Big Ten doesn't let you do that. For the most part. But it keeps these programs alive. It gives them the necessary money to keep it. And I think football is good.
I just don't like
more opportunities.
I don't have a problem with that. I just hate seeing, November 23rd.
Yeah.
I mean, Auburn's on break. So a lot of students are going to leave anyways because they're on Thanksgiving break. But you have this game. No one's coming to this. If this game was against LSU, it'll be next year.
And people
will go to that.
Yeah,
they're not
this
going
to be a problem next year.
Yeah,
and it doesn't look like it's going to be a problem anymore because it feels like the SEC is about to go away from this.
Yeah, because the thing is, I tweeted about it before the game. This is kind of silly, and someone said, "Well, Auburn needs a break between Georgia and Alabama." I'm like, okay, but Ohio State played Penn State last week. They're going to play Michigan this week. They're playing their two toughest games back to back. Auburn is used to having a break. Alabama is used to having a break.
They used to not have it, though.
Exactly. No one needs a break. You signed up to play 12 football games. No one needs a non-conference game November 23rd.
No, but
not against FCS team.
No, but you're going to get it if you can.
Of course. But
it's whole thing when everybody used to have a bye week before playing Alabama.
Yeah.
It was just like clockwork. You knew that was going to happen. I get the frustration. I get the thing of it being.
It feels like a momentum killer in terms of the way I perceive it, kind of down the stretch.
It's kind of like stealing an off week. So, you want to be strategic with that because, if you play a team like Tulane or Kent State, theoretically they're going to have a more chance to beat you than, say, a team from the FCS. So if you are going to play an FCS team, why play it? The worst one to me is when teams open the season with an FCS team. And that doesn't happen very often, but it happens every now and then where you're just like, that is a bad way to get things started.
You're playing basically a scrimmage.
Yeah, and you learn.
The spring game's tougher than that game.
Yes.
Because your defense is better than their defense.
321-1390 is how you can join us here live from the Key of Auburn studio. Josh Vitale of the Montgomery Advertiser joining us. James is on the line. James, what's up?
Hey man, it's refreshing to hear you guys. I'm so glad you guys opened up with that because man, I've been talking about this stuff for the last 10 to 15 years, man. Man, those games at the end of the year playing those cream puffs, man, that is so wrong, man. That is wrong.
It's definitely not entertaining, James.
Well, other conferences, everybody else is playing legitimate games. And if you're going to label yourself the best conference and you play these eight conference games, and then you got this game here, you're playing a weak opponent, basically a Division II school, that's just not fair. It's not fair to the other schools across the country. I think it's arrogant, and I think it's wrong, and they need to get rid of that.
Yeah, and James, I think they are getting rid of it. It sounds like Auburn's playing LSU next. They know that, look, it makes a whole lot of sense as well for their TV partners. You don't want this second to last week of the season, which last week was. The big game of the week, of course, was the Ohio State game, right? And that is going to be on that Fox game. It's going to be that news line. So CBS has to turn to Georgia, Texas A&M, a decent game, but there's really nothing else to pick from. Alabama played Western Carolina. Auburn played, you know, their paycheck game.
Mississippi State at Abilene Christian.
Yeah, Abilene Christian. Yeah, played the game. There's a lot of those games like that, and I think they've got to get away from it because you are kind of punting on the second to last week of the season when everybody should be ramping up in college football. Playoff talk is at its biggest high, and you're just saying, well, maybe there'll be a good game on. Because if it wasn't that, it was going to be Arkansas LSU, and that was no.
That was a bloodletting shown live, exactly. Live on television.
Exactly.
And then another thing is, okay, when for you guys to open up, okay, because we're coming on rivalry week, but when you're talking about this past weekend football games, how do you begin to even analyze something like that?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No. It's It is one of those games where it's like you don't really take anything from it. You just hope nobody gets hurt if you're a team. Don't look bad. Don't look really bad, and then just move on to the next week. It doesn't help anybody for sure. It is like we said earlier, James. Like it's basically like giving yourself another off week. Yeah, you have to play a game, but second half of that game for Auburn, they had no starters basically left in about after the first drive of the third quarter. So it was just give them some experience, and it doesn't really mean anything for the Iron Bowl. It doesn't mean anything coming off the Georgia game either for Auburn's sake.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, James, as always. 334-321-1390. Next up, Painter.
Shadow.
What's up, Shadow?
Hey, guys, I have a question for you today. Does passive beat aggressive?
Usually not in football. Usually not.
Okay. Then based on that, Auburn's going to lose, right?
So you're saying they're going to be passive on offense on Saturday? Is this what you're saying?
I'm saying for most of his career, Gus Malzahn has coached out of fear.
I will say in big games there is a tendency to do that. I'll point you back to 2 years ago against Alabama when they played in the Iron Bowl. They had a different kind of bold strategy, a lot of short passes, a lot of trying design things to try to get Alabama out of position. They were aggressive. They called, you know, the jump pass for Kerryon Johnson to score a touchdown. They ran Jarrett Stidham a lot more than usual. They did some different things, but yeah, I mean, this is a game where, Shadow, you can't be passive for Auburn to have a chance in this game. Alabama's still a very good defense, and they're still a very, very good offense even without their great quarterback.
Well, don't you think that we would be undefeated right now if we had shown some boldness and creativeness on offense and gone after the win instead of hoping that they have a chance in the fourth quarter, which a great defense gave them every single time? This team should be undefeated.
This team could very well be in that spot, Shadow. And there's no doubt about it whatsoever. It's one of those things, though. I don't know if aggressiveness is the thing more. It's just they couldn't do anything kind of correctly in the first three quarters of a lot of those games. But I think you make a good point here. Is that you've got to kind of pull out all the stops in this one. Go ahead.
If we can't have a quick start against freaking Samson or whoever that was we played on Saturday,
right,
what hope do you ever have? I mean, why we always got to stutter and stammer and stumble and have 17 penalties? I mean, is that not coaching, sir?
You know, it was a very bad sign, Shadow, to not get off to a good start against that team. There's no doubt about it. That is exactly, like, we said we weren't going to talk a ton about that game because there's not a lot to take away from, but I will say the lack of production on the offensive side in that first quarter. They got to it in the second quarter, but in that first quarter, the penalties, they had a hard time running the ball. Sanford was getting penetration in the backfield. They got over that, but that's not a good start. That's a team you should be dominating from the opening whistle of that game, and you didn't. And so that's going to give you a bad taste in your mouth. And yeah, I'm with you in this part that if you're trying to beat Alabama, you've got to do a lot of things differently if you can't do that against a team like Sanford early on.
And did we do anything new in your opinion this past Saturday?
Nope.
They didn't try to.
They didn't even try to either because they didn't have to. But no, they're gonna have to try. They're gonna have to do a lot of new stuff on Saturday, Shadow. I think you're
right there. They're gonna lose. I'm gonna call you up tomorrow and give you the score.
Okay. All right. We'll wait for that. And appreciate the call, Shadow. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I think there's a lot of people who are going about like how they feel about Auburn, Alabama. Like Auburn has a chance to win this game. There's no doubt about it. They're a three and a half point underdog in this one. We don't know what Alabama looks like without Tua Tagovailoa. if you saw any of the game against Western Carolina, Mac Jones is still a good quarterback, and I've said that for a while now, but they did not want him to do anything. And this was interesting because I thought of any game you'd be like, all right,
let's find out.
Open it up and just see what, if we score 95 points on this team, so be it. We got to get ready for next week. And the fact that you're not going to get any big takeaways from it, we just got to get our quarterback ready to play against a defense with a pulse. Yeah. And not only a defense with a pulse, and most of them, bubble screens, quick change.
Yeah.
Now, it worked because, A, they were playing an FCS team, and B, guys like Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle are hard to tackle for anyone.
He has the best wide receiving core in the country.
Exactly. But it was a lot of quick passes and stuff like that. It's like, and maybe they tried to do that against Auburn, but like that's a tough thing. You can't have a limited offense and play this Auburn team.
No.
And so we're going to find out if they were saving something or if they really just don't trust them. And I don't know what it is. I mean, I think it could go either way. You don't want to burn off anything right now. You do have confidence in them. Or was it a fact of,
this is our game plan.
This is what we're going to do.
Try to limit our quarterback and try to win with running the ball and quick screens the receivers.
Yeah, and I don't think that's how they're going to be against Alabama. No, but like, they got to do something different. But I think ultimately this game is going to come down to how much is Auburn's own offense going to finally take a step up against Alabama's defense. And yes, there has been talk this season about Alabama's defense not being as good as they usually are. But number 10 in the country in scoring defense, so right there with Auburn, and number 15 in play yards per play, a little behind Auburn. This is a defense that is right up there.
Yeah, not being as good as...
I think they're 6th in S&P Plus, which Auburn is 4th on defense.
Basically, our thing is they're not as good as past Alabama defenses, but that bar is so high.
Right.
They're still a top 20 defense by pretty much every metric.
All right, let's get to our first break. When we come back, I want to talk more about something you did at The Athletic. Something you do often. It is your film room. You came up with some interesting points and statistics pertaining to the Iron Bowl. Josh Vitale is with us here on a Monday edition of the Lunch Break. A valiant effort last Friday evening against Central, but Central will be back in the state championship again this year. Auburn High fell to the Red Devils. A great season, though, and a shout-out to that team and coaching staff. Coach Weingarten enjoyed hanging out with Scott Bagwell and Rob Pate. You can hear Scott and Chris Hummel. They've got Auburn High basketball for you on 96.3 W. Lee all season long. More Lunch Break after this.
Listen to the Lunch Break on the Abbey Award-winning ESPN 106.7 app.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Josh Vitale, the Montgomery Advertiser. Josh, feeling the music over there.
That piano just gets me every time.
Yeah!
This is one of the better ones that we have.
Feeling good.
Justin doesn't like these.
Some of them are okay. Some of them are not. Some of them are objectively not good.
Easy. California Funk's got a real ring to it, guy.
The one that sounds like a chase scene from a 70s movie is the one I have the hardest time with.
I like that one. It's endearing.
Endearing?
No. No?
No.
All right. No, we're not buying that one today. Yes?
You wanted...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you had a thing. You had a thing at the Athletic.
Yeah, did you want me to just sell my own piece right here?
Plug your own story, please.
Plug my own story.
Yeah, that's a good point. My bad, dude. All right, so if you're not aware of it, Justin works at the Athletic.
Yep.
And you've got a... So you sort of bypassed Samford because...
Yeah.
I think that was the
right thing. I was looking forward to a film breakdown of the Samford game, but I guess... That's not what I pay for.
So. I just wanted to replay Caleb Johnson hitting the tar out of that backup quarterback.
Pretty much, yeah. One of the thousand words on that.
Yesterday, we had a couple of conversations about what we would make the show about and if we would try to do anything ironically. But we ultimately just decided we'd talk as little Samford as possible.
It's Iron Bowl week.
But because of that, at The Athletic, you do your film analysis and you find some interesting points in there.
Yeah, and this week, found it interesting. All right, so... In the last five seasons, Alabama has lost 5 games. They have not lost. Yeah, they have not lost twice in one season since 2014. And Josh is getting a phone call
from Spam Risk.
Oh, cool!
Wow,
good friend.
Good job, Spam Risk. But in those five games, it's kind of weird finding, like, okay, what is the underlying thread of all of these games? Why when Alabama has lost, why has it been? And they've lost shootouts. They've lost low scoring games like the 2017 Iron Bowl. Mm-hmm. They've lost games where their defense has played well. They've lost games where their defense has played poorly. They've lost games where the other team was able to run the ball. They've lost games where the other team just did not even try to run the ball. So what connects all of it together? And it comes down to it, and it's been a variety of quarterbacks and a variety of offenses and a variety of styles. But ultimately, in order to beat Alabama, your quarterback has to play very well. Not an okay game, not just a decent game. Your quarterback has to play well, and specifically, they have to be efficient.
Yeah, not 340 yards and three touchdowns, just efficient and not making bad plays.
Jarrett Stidham is a great example of this. Also, Trevor Lawrence didn't really just drop a truck on Alabama for you know, throwing deep ball after deep ball after deep ball. I mean, it was those third down chunks got him a lot of yards after the catch from those Clemson players last year, was a big deal. But you got to play efficiently. You have to play efficiently against Alabama. And here's the stat. Here's the stat that when I saw it, I was just blown away by it. In the last 5 years, Alabama has lost five games, right? All right. Opposing quarterbacks against Alabama, if they have a pass efficiency rating of 140 or better, they're 5-4. So winning record, all five of their wins. If you have less than 140, you are 0-61 against Alabama. So you've got to play efficient football at quarterback to beat Alabama. And 140 is not necessarily an easy number to get to. Bo Nix has done it three times this year. For example, the Georgia games or the Ole Miss games weren't 140 games. So you gotta play. He's got to play some of his best ball of the season against a team like Alabama, and it's key. And there's a lot of different things to go about it. But you got to be efficient. It doesn't matter if you're bombing them downfield. It doesn't matter if you're a guy who's dinking and dunking. It doesn't matter if you're a guy who's going to throw the ball 50 times or 20 times in a game. You got to make the most out of your passing opportunities. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on Bo Nix to step up and play this game, because I don't think Auburn is going to be able to run the ball super consistently against Alabama.
No.
They might.
No.
But I don't think that's the way to go. The way to go and the way to beat Alabama, statistically, this year and the past few years, has been your quarterback has to do a lot of damage with the opportunities he's given.
And we've seen the last few weeks that's really the only offense Auburn has, because they're not able to just line up and run the ball consistently. They've had to go to this quick passing, kind of stretch the field, dink and dunk kind of offense. And hasn't worked great. Didn't work great against Ole Miss. Didn't work great against Georgia. But you saw more progress in those games on offense than you did see against LSU or against Florida, which is, I mean, at this point in the season, the offense is what it is. You're trying to take little victories for it and see if there's something there that it can use. It has to be more efficient. That's the score, which has been the biggest problem.
The five quarterbacks that have beaten Alabama over the last five seasons: Chad Kelly in 2015, Deshaun Watson in 2016, national title game, 2017, Jarrett Stidham, 2018, Trevor Lawrence in the national title game, and so far in 2019, it's only been Joe Burrow.
It's a good list of quarterbacks.
Very good list of quarterbacks, but very different. No one's Deshaun Watson, one of the best players we've ever seen at the college level, and then Chad Kelly. And then a guy like Jarrett Stidham, who was very up and down in his career at Auburn, but there's no denying he played one of his best games of his career in the 2017 Iron Bowl. Then you have a guy like Trevor Lawrence, who was just this out and like elite talent, maybe the best quarterback prospect of the last 20 years at quarterback coming out of high school. He gets it done in the national title game. Then you have a guy like Joe Burrow, who year before really struggled against Alabama, different system, different situation, ends up putting up good numbers. So it's not as if, Bo Nix has no chance. Look, if Chad Kelly beat Alabama, Bo Nix has a chance to beat Alabama. If a true freshman Trevor Lawrence could do it on the biggest stage of them all, Bo Nix can do it at home in a game that has less stakes but still very, very important.
Speaking of Joe Burrow, and I know you just said you need big plays, but they don't have to be bombs. You've got a stat in here where Burrow is the only winning quarterback to complete at least one deep ball for a touchdown against Alabama in the last five seasons, and more than two deep balls in total.
Yeah. That's outrageous. You don't air it out against them. If you look at those numbers, Jarrett Stidham threw two passes longer than 20 yards and beat Alabama. Trevor Lawrence, people who think of him throwing those beautiful deep balls against Clemson, you actually go back and look.
He threw four.
A lot of those were intermediate balls. A lot of those were those comebackers in about that 10 to 20 yard range and was able to make really good plays, especially on third downs. Don't have numbers for Chad Kelly, but a lot of Chad Kelly stuff, that was the weird run after catch in that game. They had the really bizarre fumble off the helmet play and, you know, a lot of stuff like that. But here's the key. In those five games, opponents have had at least five passing plays of 20-plus yards, but they're not doing it by just throwing it down the field. Alabama does not get beat deep very often. This is not a team that you can run past them in coverage a lot. So what you got to do is you got to get those good, efficient passes and then let your players run it after the catch. Good news for Auburn is they've got guys who can do that after the catch. Remember, Ryan Davis, you know, not only was he a lunch break intern Hall of Famer, he put up 140 yards almost against Alabama in the 2017 Iron Bowl because they could not cover him and then could not deal with him after the catch. Anthony Schwartz. We've seen Seth Williams do a lot of damage after the catch and on short routes this year. They've got to go that. They can't just say like, okay, well, we got to generate some deep. They're going to take some shots, but you don't beat Alabama by taking shots.
No.
And that's really key because you look at it, that's where Bo Nix has been at his best this season. He can hit the short passes really efficiently. We saw it in the Ole Miss game. We saw it in the Georgia game. They're going to have to do that against Alabama. That is going to be kind of the path forward. That's one of the keys to the game. One of the other keys to the game, you can't throw an interception. It is weird, but the last quarterback to throw an interception and beat Alabama was Cardell Jones. That's been a while.
Which, you can break that down as not only being a long time, but also like a team that objectively has as much talent as Alabama.
Yeah.
Which is not usual in Auburn, and Auburn doesn't have that.
They had Cardell Jones, who was playing on the biggest hot streak we've probably ever seen a quarterback go in the last decade. Ezekiel Elliott was on that team. Michael Thomas was on that team.
Say what you want about Urban Meyer, but he was the coach.
And then on defense, Alabama had Ohio State had a really good defense. Joey Bosa was at the peak of his powers.
Yeah, like that,
in that
team,
game.
For as much as the narrative was about the third string quarterback, when you go back and look at the roster, you go, oh, there's a reason why the third string quarterback had success. It didn't matter who was playing. I objectively could have handed the ball off to Zeke Elliott.
Right. And so that's one of those things where like you can get away with it if you have that much talent, maybe. But like, don't turn the ball over, because Alabama is ruthlessly efficient at turning the ball over. And even in games that teams have avoided throwing interceptions, there's been some of their closest calls. If you take care of the ball against Alabama, you have a much, much better chance of winning in terms of the interception game. Got to do it. You have to do it. You give Alabama a free possession, as good as Auburn's defense is, that's asking for trouble. It's asking for trouble because they don't need help. If there's one thing that you know about Alabama football, is they don't need help. And turning the ball over, it's got to be good news for Auburn, though, and Bo Nix. Bo Nix has not thrown a pick in Jordan-Hare this year. He's been a whole lot better at Jordan-Hare. Even against Georgia, even when he stepped up, that was a better game from him than he did against LSU and Florida. So it's going to be very helpful. Don't throw picks. You cannot throw picks against Alabama. And then third and finally, it's third down. We all remember Trevor Lawrence just ruining Alabama's life in that national title game by third down. It would be like, it didn't matter what happened on first and second down. It was just third down. They were going to move the chains and they were going to stay on the field. And it was going to be really, really frustrating. This is key. The quarterbacks that have beaten Alabama the last 5 years, they have been deadly on third downs. I mean, completion percentage over 70%. I think it was like something around like 75% of their or 80% of their completions have gone for first downs. You have to move the chains through the air against Alabama. Now, the key here is you use those short passes, because if you get in third and long, you're dead. And we know Auburn this season, if you're in third and long, you're dead. It's what hurt them against LSU and Florida. Can't do that. Cannot do that in this game. So the short passes, get in those situations. Payne, you remember how many times, and Josh, well, 2017 Iron Bowl, 2017. How many times did Auburn throw the ball on third and two or third and three and just dunk, let it go, dunk, let it go? And they had Kerryon Johnson. They had an objectively good running game that season. They only averaged like 3.2 yards carry because they knew Alabama was going to bring it. It was just you had to beat them by spreading it out and making one-on-one plays and say, all right, can you beat us in space?
And did you already point out, I know I'm backtracking a little bit here, but in 2010, 13, and 17, Auburn either won or tied the turnover battle.
Oh, yeah.
So in 10, they won it. In 13, mm-hmm. they won it. And then 2017, they both had one turnover.
Right. You got to be able to do that. And then on third downs, you got to be able to move the chains. And the key to that is staying out of third and long.
Yeah.
Get in third and short. And not to get in third and short so you can run the ball a ton. Get in third and short so you can throw the ball. Joe Burrow, 5 of 6 on third downs in the game against Alabama. His only miss was a pass that went longer than 10 yards. When he got to hit those quick passes on third down, it was moving the chains.
And that's why those quick passes could be so effective, because you look at Auburn. If Auburn is not going to line up on first down and run the ball 5 yards. It's just not going to do that. It hasn't done it all season. But if you can get a little swing pass to Eli Stove or Anthony Schwartz or a slant to Seth Williams, and you're talking about 2nd and 3, 2nd and 4, something like that. Now you're in a position where, all right, you can see the offense start to get going.
You can stretch it a little more. You can try to run, and then because you know on third down you're going to have a much more manageable play.
Yeah, if you come out running on a first down, we've seen that time and time again this year. It's not going to work. That's the reason
they're going to run on first down, but they can't do it a ton.
Yeah,
I went back to the 2017 Iron Bowl. 10 of Auburn's first 12 first down plays were passes. And that was a change from what we had expected. Bo Nix,
that LSU game that year, all they did was run the ball on first
2019, Bo Nix, very good quarterback on first down. His numbers, I mean, you could put his numbers up on first down against a lot of guys in the country. Second and third down, that's where the problem comes.
Yep.
Because he's being asked to do a whole lot in those situations. So get in more manageable situations and then take advantage. You have to stay on the field. You have to get an insane drive. Auburn's defense, this could be the best defense they've had in a very, very long time. You still need to help them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, even if you're not scoring on every possession, because you're not going to, but just get some, convert, move the chains, keep them off the field a little bit, get them moving back, win the field position battle.
All the things that Auburn really didn't do for the first 3 quarters against Georgia.
Auburn is getting, heading into last week's game, Auburn went 3 and out the 4th most times percentage-wise in the SEC, but they had the 6th most successful offense. Those numbers don't add up.
When Auburn gets a first down, it tends to move the football.
It's a pretty good offense.
It's got to get a first down.
It's not a great offense. It's a good offense.
Yeah.
But if they go three and out so many times, it's such a boom or bust offense, and you cannot do that against Alabama.
And Gus talks about it all the time, and people yell at me when I say it on Twitter, but you to get going in Auburn's pace, which is when Auburn's comfortable, it's got to get a first down. It has to have something positive.
You can't manufacture it.
You can't run the ball for 1 yard on first down, then hustle the line and call another play. You have to get something going, get the chains moving, and that's when you start to get into it. And you saw it in that 4th quarter against Georgia when they were able to do that. They got early first downs, and they started moving the football. But, I mean, I think going into the Sanford game, they had gone 3 and out 38 times, which was 2 more than Arkansas had gone out 3 and out this season. So that's been the problem. When they've gotten a first down, they've moved the ball. When they didn't get a first down, yeah, bad things happen.
All right, let's get to break. When we come back, a little news from the SEC regarding one of the biggest storylines of Auburn football season.
Listen to the Lunch Break on your smartphone or tablet with the free ESPN 106.7 app.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless, Josh Vitale, Montgomery Advertiser. All right.
California E is number one.
California E is number one. Marlon Davidson wins SEC Defense Alignment of the Week for a 4th time, which means he is ahead of Derrick Brown.
Take that, Derrick.
Pressure is on.
Derrick Brown's going to have to play really well against Alabama in order to even it up.
Mm. Conveniently for him and Auburn fans, he usually does this in really big games.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Derek does not put up numbers in big games. People are asking me, like, oh, what could Derek do against Samford? And I'm like, he doesn't play a ton against
Samford. He's not worried about
Marlon Davidson only played 23 snaps. And he's
managed. But he was constantly in the backfield.
He had 4 tackles, 2.5 for loss, and a sack, and 23 snaps. That's efficient football.
Very, very efficient football. So, so let's just put it. Does Derek Brown tie it up this week? I think if there's any question, if there's any, like, maybe they pick him.
Yeah. Let's do it.
It's insane, though. Like,
it's more surprising now when one of them does not win it, because it's pretty much been, it's either been defensive player or defensive lineman.
7 of 13 weeks.
It's outrageous.
Yeah, yeah. So they're guaranteed to get half.
Yes.
That is.
At a minimum.
Yeah. That is a crazy amount. And so we'll see. I think if you're ready for anything, Derek Brown doesn't need any extra motivation because he's a very good football player and he's going to be making a lot of money very, very soon to do it. But this could be a big game for Derek because he's got that. He's going to have that nagging with him with his roommate all week.
Yeah. Which probably, I think that's going to, I think Auburn fans would be, I think Auburn fans should want Marlon Davidson to be in Derek Brown's ear all week.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of telling him about that.
On a serious, less serious note, Marlon Davidson, Derek Brown, very competitive, sure. There's a lot you could say about Derek Brown.
Mm.
The one thing people were freaking out when they saw Derek Brown jumping and breaking a wooden block. Mm-hmm. He's been taken, is it Taekwondo?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't surprised.
No.
Like, Nothing Derek Brown does surprises me.
Everyone was acting like it was really cool, and it is cool.
It is cool.
It is cool that someone that large is that athletic.
It's not surprising.
But yeah, I was like, haven't y'all been watching? Like, what that man is doing on Saturday is actually more impressive than
more
that
impressive.
Thing.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. He's this big dude. You don't expect him to be that aerodynamic and athletic, but you guys have been watching this guy for 4 years now.
Yeah. No, that wasn't surprising whatsoever. Like, he's done a lot cooler things on a football field.
Cole tweeted out a play last night where Derek Brown was ended up not involved in the play at all, which happens a lot with him just because he's doing so much that it opens up everyone else to get the sack or the play in the backfield. He was immediately double-teamed. He held off one guy with his right arm and just pushed the other guy over onto the ground with his other arm. And I think Marlon got around and got the sack or the whatever, so Derek didn't make the play, but he took on two defensive linemen and was like, no, just get out of my way. I'm coming through this here. That to me, he can jump and crush, break a board, whatever. To I don't care if it's Samford, to just push over two offensive linemen and say, no, I don't care if you're double-teaming me. This
it's two humans. It's two large
humans.
It's two
human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not. Nothing he does is surprising anymore.
Speaking of defense, and again, we weren't going to try to talk about the Samford game too much, but Javion Sherwood ejected for...
That's a big one.
And a call that was not good.
I didn't.
And in a variety of ways. Because it looked like his face mask hit his chest.
Yeah.
He didn't lead. That was just it was a tough hit. It was a violent hit, but it was.
I guess they must have dinged him because, I mean, he didn't hit him with the scrum, but he lowered his head as he went in.
I saw some Auburn fans saying, hey, respect to Coach Malzahn for being frank with the ref, who I guess name is Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that video was circulating where he says, hey, you know,
got the Iron Bowl next week.
I know that this paycheck game, like we got to play by the rules here, but.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but even then, they didn't. And at the beginning, they called the foul on Nick Coe.
Yeah, who was near the play, not
so. Like
in it.
for you to say, okay, let's go to review, and then it wasn't clear, and then they're like, okay,
it was actually number nine,
and yeah, we still got the call right. It's like it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad, and they were reviewing stuff that didn't need to be reviewed in that game. It's just...
Yeah. SEC officiating has been... It's not just Auburn. It's been bad for every team all season.
Right.
Auburn fans have lost some close games, so I think they feel more aggrieved than most fan bases this year.
But now you don't have a key player on Saturday for the Iron Bowl, and people will be like, oh, he's a backup safety. He's like, no. Like, when they go dime, he's always out there for the most part.
Yeah.
And they're going to go dime probably a good bit against Alabama, because Alabama's probably going to go four wide very often.
Yeah, he's the backup safety, like, on the two deep depth chart only. He's not backup. Is I don't think Kevin and Steele and anyone on the staff, they don't really use the whole backup thing. A backup safety.
And
I tweeted it
Saturday, and I still believe it. He's the best defensive back Auburn's got in terms of pure talent.
He's good.
He can do anything you ask out of a safety, at a very, very high level. If you look at his per snap grades, it's last season as a freshman, he was the best defensive back Auburn had on his roster. This year, he's right up there again. And I know other guys get more attention and more plays, but he is special. He is a special player. And there is no disrespect whatsoever towards Jeremiah Denson and Daniel Thomas. I think Jeremiah Denson and Daniel Thomas, as a combination, is the best safety group Auburn's had in a long time. But Javion Sherwood and Smoke Monday could be better just because of their talent.
I think in a few months we're going to be having the same conversation we did about the linebackers.
No,
like, they lost a bunch, but there's not going to be much drop-off there, if there is any drop-off at all.
And there were even more questions about linebackers. Like, you don't even need to question safety. Like, there's no.
We know who the starters are next year.
Next year, and then people are going to be like, you know, that's my thing about the defense next season. They're going to lose a generational talent in Derrick Brown. They're going to lose an all-SEC player in Marlon Davidson. Those are going to be two losses. There's going to be two guys that those guys don't grow on trees. Like they.
But if you set the bar to the moon and come back down to earth, you'll be okay. Like until Rodney Gardner and
they're still going to be pretty high up in the sky, I would think.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, wrote about this last week because like they all Kevin Steele has done since he's been here is lose really good players and just slot really good ones in right after them.
I can understand Auburn fans saying
people were freaked out about Carl and Montrevious Adams.
Jeff Holland left. Nick Coe's having a terrible season after being one of the best defensive linemen on the team last year. Defensive line's still fine. Deshaun Davis, Trey Matthews, Steven Roberts, Carlton Davis, Jamel Dean. The list of good players Auburn has lost is very long, and still this might be Auburn's best defense since way before Steele got here.
Yeah, like until they trot out a bad defense, I think Auburn fans can feel pretty confident that the coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball can lose players and probably going to be okay.
I think they'll be fine next season. Defensive line's not going to be quite as disruptive because you don't have a Derrick Brown.
Of course. You're losing a likely top 10 draft pick.
You're
going to
miss those players regardless.
And I'd love to see where Marlon ends up. Don't think he's a first rounder, but like Marlon's
second day seems like it's on.
He's guaranteed himself to me at least top three rounds.
Yeah. But I mean, you look at some of the guys that have cameoed this season and got some good playing time against Samford. Derrick Hall is going to be very good.
Yeah,
like Derrick Hall has the potential to be Jeff Holland, D Ford 2.0 in terms of just speed rush. Go get that guy.
There's a reason he was in the rotation as soon as the Oregon game as a true freshman.
Yeah. And then he's good.
I think Big Cat could take a Jeff Holland esque leap. Because the year before
could be Jeff like, well, Marlon.
Yeah, well, the year before Jeff Holland had a huge year, he was that guy who was right there. He was like a one step away from
Big
a bunch
Cat's
of sacks.
Still among the tops in the SEC in quarterback.
I think
hits
he's got 10.
Year. Yeah,
yeah,
in hits, mm-hmm. And it's like
he only has two sacks, but he's been so close. And if he gets that one extra step he needs in the offseason, he could be the next breakout pass rusher.
And defensive tackle is tough. It is because you're losing Derrick Brown, mm-hmm. and there's no one you can like. Auburn could go 20 more years and not have another player like Derrick Brown.
Yeah.
Like it's very possible. But Daquan Newkirk healthy enough to start on Saturday.
Yeah. Truesdell's had
a really good year. Connus Miller has popped this season.
Rodney's going to find someone.
Jaron Handy is already looking like a player. They're going to be fine on the defensive line. They bring back all of their linebackers, theoretically. The secondary pieces you lose, you feel good about the guys coming up behind them.
You could lose four starters.
You could.
Noah's going to have a decision. I don't know about Noah.
I don't know.
He'll have a
Maybe.
Decision to
I
make.
I don't know.
It wouldn't surprise me if he came back. But
then even the guys you have replacing who could come up and start in line. McCreary has been good this season.
Yeah.
He's been very good this season. Christian Tutt is playing extremely well.
Talked about Smoke and Sherwood.
Yeah, the defense is going to be great. The defense might not be one of the five best in the country next season. But
it's going to be one of the 20 best.
At least.
Yeah.
At least.
We'll get into our final break here. At some point, I want to talk about how we feel about field storming. The last two times Auburn has won this game, it's been at home, and they've done just that. Also at 12:30, Blake Lovell will join us. Auburn basketball. We'll talk some hoops as they get back on the court tonight. 3-2-1-13-90. Join Justin Ferguson and me, plus the perfect Monday guest, Josh Vitale. The Auburn High football season is over. A great season, though, for the Tigers as they advance to the semifinals this year. And there's a plethora of ways to keep up with ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the ESPN 106.7 app, plus your smart speaker. ESPN on smart devices is powered by Point Broadband.
You're on the Abby Award-winning Best Sports Show in Alabama for 2 years in a row. The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
So we've decided that the cornbread was, in fact, acceptable. Good cornbread there, Gianna Han.
What a comeback from break.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get into what's on tonight in just a moment. Josh Vitale here with us on a Monday edition of the show. Justin Ferguson, you'll be out tomorrow. Michael Pappas will join me, though. You'll speak with Gus ahead of the Iron Bowl. We've got a busy week for you scheduled. Looking forward to it. Later on in today's show, Blake Lovell will join us, and we'll talk Auburn hoops. Until then, though, Let's jump into what's on tonight.
Time now for what's on tonight.
All right, so it's Thanksgiving week, Painter, and you know what that means.
Good food, family, friends.
And what does it mean when it comes to what's on tonight?
The Bills play the Cowboys.
That's later this week.
All right.
Josh, maybe you can help me out here.
Sorry.
Thanksgiving specials?
Specials.
Okay.
Flicks, good movies.
Not necessarily.
Buffets?
Buffets?
I don't know. People do different things around the holiday.
So the week of Thanksgiving always means two things in the world of sports. One, football.
Detroit.
Yeah, a lot of it.
A lot of football. Number two, a lot of college basketball.
True.
College basketball coming up here with Thanksgiving week in full display right now. First, let's get to the NFL action. ESPN tonight at 7:15. Ravens Rams Monday Night Football.
Could be a good game.
Lamar Jackson against a Rams team still trying to get out of first gear, it feels like.
Yeah.
We'll see how that one goes. It should be interesting at least.
I need a tight end to get about 40 points tonight.
Mark Andrews?
Everett.
Oh, well, good luck.
Good luck.
That.
Yeah, good, sorry. Good luck.
Sorry for your loss.
All right. Yeah. Here we go. Here we go, folks. College basketball. We got a lot of it. Let's run it down. ESPN2, 130. Maui Invitational gets going. Georgia taking on Dayton. Tom Crean back in Maui.
Good for him.
I guess it helps when you've got one of the flashiest players, certainly one of the most intriguing players in basketball. They'll slot you a spot.
For sure. Number four, at 4 o'clock, rather. 4 o'clock. Number three, Michigan State takes on Virginia Tech.
Okay.
So, big team there in Maui.
Different sport, but good on the Hokies for rallying this football season. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, it's been really, especially going, you know, sending Bud Foster out by playing just stifling defense.
They shut out in his final home game. Well done.
And they shut out their last opponent too.
Yeah.
So they're doing a really good job. FS1 at 5 tonight. Pittsburgh takes on Kansas State. Pittsburgh's bad.
Yikes.
They beat Florida State, which beat Florida, but they also lost to Nicholls State. Big Ten Network, 5:30, number 10, Ohio State. Quietly, watch out for Ohio State this year. This is going to be a really good basketball team.
I like them.
They take on Kent State tonight in the Buckeye Classic at 5:30 on Big Ten Network. 6 o'clock, number 20, Tennessee. Tennessee back in the top 25, as they should be. They've gotten off to a really good start this season. I think them and Auburn are the two best-looking teams in the SEC at this point in the season.
Kentucky's most talented and has not looked very good.
They take on Chattanooga tonight on SEC Network. ESPNU at 6, Butler taking on Missouri. So, some more SEC action for you. And Butler, you know what you're going to get out of Butler. Every year, it's going to be a well-drilled shooting team.
Yep.
And they're going to give you some problems. ESPN2 at 6, the first game of the Legends Classic that Auburn is taking part in Brooklyn. Go ahead and look ahead to see who Auburn will be playing tomorrow. Richmond taking on Wisconsin at 6 o'clock on ESPN2. ACC Network at 6, Arkansas and Georgia Tech. Interesting there. Arkansas's defense has been one of the best in America so far this season. Georgia Tech is as sporadic as they come.
Musselman can coach it.
As a college basketball team. It's on ACC Network at 6. 7:30, Painter, Northwestern will probably lose to Bradley on FS1. Big Ten Network, Indiana taking on Louisiana Tech at 7:30. As well, 8 o'clock on ESPNU. It is an odd number year in the Maui Invitational. Therefore, Chaminade is back in the field.
Yes.
They take on number 4 Kansas.
Oh, fine.
In that game tonight. ESPN News at 8:30 tonight. The one everybody's worried about. We'll talk about it some in the second hour. Number 19 Auburn taking on New Mexico in Brooklyn. It's going to be on ESPN News. Make sure you have it.
The Lobos.
At 8:30 tonight. ESPN2 at 8:30. Going on at the same time, Stanford taking on Oklahoma. Then ESPN2 to wrap up the action tonight. 10:30, BYU takes on UCLA.
That's a lot of basketball, folks. A
lot of basketball. UCLA also just lost
Russell Westbrook.
Really recently, UCLA losing. No House Hunters International tonight, unfortunately. They're playing Love It or List It Marathon. So
gross.
You get to watch annoying Canadian people talk.
Annoying? Find them endearing.
But the Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick. Have you watched Love It or List It before?
It's not
those very, people are
they
irritating.
Just fight all
Love it or leave
people,
it.
Yeah. HBO2 at 5:30. The documentary on the U.S. gymnastics scandal. Very well done. Very tough, but very, very well done. It's worth your time. That is what's on tonight. That's the end of hour number one.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. To be a part of the show, call 321-1390 or toll free 888-382-7502.
It is the top of the second hour on a Monday, which means Josh Vitale is in studio with us.
The perfect Monday guest.
And which also means it's time to run down the action from the weekend.
The National Football League.
Let's get it going.
Yeah, is there some tension between us? Is there some tension between us right now, Josh Vitale?
Actually, no.
Two historic franchises square off. Only one can win.
Buccaneers, Falcons, yes.
Actually, no, we learned this week, we'll get to it later, but we learned that Josh Allen is the better Allen than Brandon Allen. So,
We'll start on that Thursday night game, Texans 20, Colts 17.
Was that the best game of the weekend?
Nuke Hopkins?
Good. The Colts, and this is just an idea, I'm not a defensive coordinator, but they should have covered him better.
Yeah, I think the Colts are a really good team. I think the Texans continue to win in spite of their surroundings.
Yeah, the Texans are a team that should be much better than they are.
If you are a Colts fan, how much does this year hurt that Andrew Luck isn't quarterbacking your team? Because it's like, this is a good Super Bowl team.
If Andrew Luck's playing.
Yesterday's action, Buccaneers 35, Falcons 22. Falcons offense comes back. I mean, defense comes back down to earth.
The Falcons, like, oh, we're one of the best teams in the league. Oh, the Bucs are coming? Oh, no. We're not going to.
Jameis looked excellent again.
He threw a pick, like, early, and then like, I'm going to throw four touchdowns.
Yeah, I saw a couple of people pointing out that he can be electric because he can give you points for the other team.
It's almost as if he was a Heisman Trophy winner as a redshirt freshman and was a number one overall pick.
Yeah. The problem is that he just has not gotten better in the NFL.
Nope.
He is the same quarterback he was when he got here.
He will also give your team points and he will give the other team points.
Yeah.
Which tends to be unhelpful.
Bills 20, Broncos 3.
Wow, baby. 8-3 Buffalo Bills, ladies and gentlemen.
I think the Broncos are 2-9.
We don't have to talk about the schedule and who those eight wins have come against.
Those are going to the playoffs.
They are. They are only one game off from my 9-win season. And if they can go 3-5 down the stretch here.
That'd be a good for the schedule.
Or excuse me, 3-2 over the last 5 games. Wow.
Painter?
Yes?
How does it feel to cheer for the NFL equivalent of the Georgia Bulldogs?
I don't even think you can give them that much credit, but I get your point. The team that is there and
excellent defense, the offense is just like, wow, I'm surprised you can even do anything correctly.
It's like basically if Georgia...
You've got talent, allegedly.
If Georgia had a quarterback who ran more than he threw.
Right. Josh Allen would be a great running back. They should have swapped the narratives with him and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
I feel like that.
Why isn't Josh Allen getting it? Well, Josh Allen is, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Bears 19, Giants 14.
The Bears scored 19 points.
Mitch Trubisky threw another interception in the red zone.
Oh, well.
But he did paint a ride on fantasy. Picked him up off the waivers. Thanks, Mitch. I don't know if you're going to be playing meaningful football again after this season.
Giants... They're bad.
Yeah.
They're real bad.
They were bad going into the year. They're still bad now. They'll be bad next year. They'll be bad for a long time.
They're going to be they're real bad. Steelers 16, Bengals 10. Bengals are still winless. Steelers are still technically in the playoff hunt.
They would be maybe the worst playoff team ever if they make the playoffs.
They would be up there for sure. They would be up there for sure. Just kind of tells you how there's really not anything going on in the AFC.
AFC's bad.
If the Bengals go winless, do they fire Zach Taylor?
They were
not supposed to be this bad.
I never agree with firing a coach after 1 year.
They were not supposed to be this bad, though.
They're never going to be good.
Winless? The Dolphins have won twice.
That's true. I don't think you fire them after 1 year. You give them at least a second.
It's really likely. Speaking of the Dolphins, they lose 41-24 to the Browns. Baker looked good.
Yeah, sometimes he does.
I mean, this is the thing. It's just like how much stock do you put into to lighten up the Dolphins this season? Because the Dolphins, 2 games they've won this year, it's just been those grinded out kind of why were you playing this poorly kind of game.
Yeah.
But yeah, when talent comes together, the Dolphins are going to get smoked in pretty much every game they play in this season. Next, Saints 34, Panthers 31. Joey Sly missing a gimme field goal.
Come on, Joey.
And then Will Lutz almost trying to miss his.
I thought he was going to miss it in real time. I was like, they're both going to miss makeable field goal. They're both making $1 million, and they're both going to miss game winners.
Saints defense, what happened?
Saints defense has kind of turned to my. I mean, the Panthers is just like let's let Christian McCaffrey do some things.
Christian McCaffrey very good at football.
I think DJ Moore had a good game yesterday
as
well.
He had a big cut time catch.
But Saints still winning. I mean, it's kind of with so many teams kind of not looking great at times this season. The fact that the Saints, you know, survive in advance kind of played. I mean, they did lose to the Falcons a couple weeks ago at home. So the fact that they beat a division, they beat a division rival at home definitely is helpful for the future. This is the most interesting final score of the weekend to me, probably for all the wrong reasons. Jets 34, Raiders 3. Derek Carr gets benched in this game. Sam Darnold looked good.
The whole team looked good.
They looked really good.
So as someone who grew up watching a lot of New York football, unfortunately, this is a narrative that continues. Teams that come from the West Coast to New York or to anywhere on the East Coast just suck every time they do it.
It's weird because we just spent a whole week talking about – there's two storylines coming into this week that both got really – and we're about to talk – we'll talk about the next one in a couple of games here. Two narratives coming into the week that just immediately like fell all flat on their face in the NFL. One, and we'll get to the second one in a second, but number one was John Gruden, the Raiders.
Coach him up.
We were wrong about them. They got it going. They know what they're doing.
They were challenging for the West.
They've got the easiest schedule left in the NFL this season. They're about to coast into the playoffs, and they lose by 31 on the road to the Jets.
The Jets are not good.
Darnold looked good.
He did.
Darnold looked good, but that was about it. Seahawks 17, Eagles 9. Ugh. Carson Wentz is bad right now.
I hate watching any game the Eagles play because no team can score in the 20s. Mm-hmm. They're just gross, awful football games.
The highlights in this one, Rashad Penny had a long touchdown run.
Russell Wilson on David Moore.
On a flea flicker.
Mm.
Was beautiful, but and that's all they needed.
Yeah.
And the Seahawks, once again, I mean, their defense is coming around. Sneaky good NFC team. I mean,
they'll be a wild card, but they're a team that no one wants to see in the wild card.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. Washington 19, Lions 16. This was a game between Dwayne Haskins and Jeff Driskel.
Guess how much tickets were for that game?
Nothing.
$5. NFL game, $5 tickets.
$5.
Yeah.
Dwayne Haskins.
Things you can get for $5.
A foot-long sandwich.
Mm. It's true.
A good one.
Yeah. It's probably better than that game, actually.
I would actually take the sandwich.
Over the game?
Yeah. Have you ever been to FedEx Field?
No.
You would much rather eat a sandwich than go to...
pretty much anywhere.
Than willingly go to FedEx Field.
Even like Arby's.
We'll put it on the poll. Things you can get for $5 better than that NFL game.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that.
Did we see Dwayne Haskins just forget to take a knee?
He was taking a selfie with a fan.
Yeah, that's not going to look great.
No.
Oh, God.
Titans 42, Jaguars 20. This was a butt-kicking, and the Jags kind of came back a little bit at the end, but some questionable calls. Ryan Tannehill has played really well.
Balling.
Ryan Tannehill, I was reading Bill Barnwell this morning. Ryan Tannehill leads the NFL since he became the starter in yards per attempt off of play-action passes by a country mile. He's been super efficient. He hasn't turned the ball over. His completion percentage is high. Derrick Henry is quietly putting together an outstanding season. Mm-hmm. Had a heck of a touchdown run in this game. And the Titans defense, when it plays well, it plays really, really well. And the Jags didn't really have much to answer for.
Start Gardner Minshew, please. Get Nick Foles out of here.
The thing about this with Tannehill is like it's surprising that Tannehill's been this good. Now he's been asked to be ball control, play action, make good plays downfield, you know, kind of guy. So it sucks personally for me because I like Marcus Mariota so much, and Mariota was just too hurt to ever get back to that form again.
I'm excited to see who will take the shot on the Marcus Mariota reclamation project next season. Because there's someone
could be interesting.
It could
be interesting. But yeah, I mean, I am very surprised that Ryan Tannehill's like what 4-1 since the start, 5-1.
Yeah, I mean, I thought when they benched Mariota, I thought it'd be one of those things where they would change quarterbacks every week the rest of the season, just because nothing. But Tannehill's playing way better than he ever played for the Dolphins.
Patriots 13, Cowboys 9. The other storyline heading into this week was Dak Prescott is the best quarterback in the NFL this year.
Yeah,
and Dak Prescott missed some layups yesterday.
Yeah, and the weather was incredibly awful.
The weather was horrible, but they put up 9 points. Jason Garrett, coach scared, which you can't do against the Patriots.
Yeah.
Patriots aren't good. Like, their offense is not good right now. It's just not. Tom Brady's just not very good right now. If Tom Brady was playing on pretty much any other team in the NFL, probably wouldn't have the similar amount of success. It's just the supporting cast is so good right now, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Stephon Gilmore might be the best defensive player of the year.
Right, and it really doesn't matter. And they slowed down a Cowboys offense that had been, and yes, the weather was played a part into it, but they slowed down a Cowboys offense that did. That was pretty good heading into this game. Finally, Sunday night game, Niners 37, Packers 8. The Niners just played a Niners game, and it was spread the ball around. Garoppolo hits the easy throws, makes big guys make good plays after the catch, force some turnovers, play excellent defense. They weren't even full strength on defense, and they just locked him down. Yeah. This Niners team is
really good.
Really good.
And the Packers, I keep thinking this Packers team, it's good. It has Aaron Rodgers. It's got an offensive minded coach.
Defense is a little bit better this year, but then last night they kind of got torched.
And then this team, they don't score a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. I feel like this Packers offense should be good, and it's just weirdly not every week. Sometimes it is really good, and sometimes it's like, oh, we don't know how to play. Very weird.
If you were to say, all right, these teams have a shot at making the Super Bowl this year, who are you putting in there?
A couple weeks ago from the NFC, I would say Saints, Packers, and Niners. Now I think the two best teams in the NFC are both in the West, and the Niners and the Seahawks.
Right. I don't believe in anyone in... I mean, the Saints, if they can get... They have the potential to do that.
I think you're right. I think they're probably the third best team for me right now in the NFC.
The Vikings are interesting because, like, I don't know what their ceiling is, but, like, they're going to be a problem for anybody.
They're consistent. If they get hot.
I do not believe in anyone in the NFC East, and no one should believe in anybody in the NFC East.
NFC East is a bad division. It always is.
So, 3-4 teams in the NFC. Yeah. In the AFC...
It's Patriots, Ravens.
Yeah, I don't feel like...
The Chiefs don't have enough defense for me. I'm sorry. Uh-uh. They can't play enough defense to beat either of those teams.
Yeah, and the Raiders are leading the West, and the AFC South... I mean, nobody's really buying a ton of stock in the Texans.
Texans are talented, but they're not good.
AFC North, the Steelers and the Browns.
Yeah, I mean, it's a two-team race in the AFC.
Right. So
it's going to be very interesting.
It's going to be interesting. Again, tonight, Ravens-Rams tonight on Monday Night Football. Ravens win, man. They look, if they do, they look like a favorite. I would love to see a Ravens-Niners Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Or a Ravens-Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
Russ and Lamar going head to head.
Anything other than the Patriots, honestly. I don't care who plays in it. Just don't let it be the Patriots.
Are the Patriots really the Georgia of the NFL right now? I was making fun of the Bills, but I think it might be the Patriots.
I feel like the thing with the Patriots, though,
relying too much on Sonny Michel.
And I guess it depends on if you're just looking at this season, but at least the Patriots have won championships a lot. Now, if you're talking about...
No, yeah, I'm talking about this season.
This year alone, maybe that is more apt, because I think that the Bills are not as relevant in their own division in their own, just generally, as a team like Georgia, who's at least in the playoff hunt.
And Tom Brady, as a very veteran starter who's not playing well, or particularly, or doing too much, kind of fits the whole Jake Fromm narrative right now, where he's a 3-year starter who's, like, really not doing anything.
Yeah, averaging, like, 4 yards an attempt.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's get to break. When we come back, we will talk a little more. What should we turn to?
I'm a big fan of the Thanksgiving.
We have Josh in here for his. He is traditionally bad at food takes.
Horrendous.
So I think we are going to go Thanksgiving 101 with Josh Vitale coming up next. Also, 12:30, Blake Lovell of Clutch Points joins us. We'll talk Auburn basketball and the SEC at large. Auburn, New Mexico tonight, and a whole lot more. Stay tuned. You're listening to Lunch Break.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless, Josh Vitale, the Montgomery Advertiser, in studio with us. All right, it's Thanksgiving week, which means it's a lot about food. Which means Josh Vitale is going to have some takes.
Legendarily bad takes.
Legendarily bad food takes. Josh, what is your worst or most controversial? Let's say, what is your most controversial Thanksgiving food take that you can think of?
Well, it's very simple. I think Thanksgiving is a bad food holiday.
Okay. I have seen this more this year than I've ever seen it. We talked about this Friday. I have not seen this take a ton in the past.
Yeah,
I just don't like Thanksgiving. It's not. Food's not bad. It's just as far as food holidays go.
What's a better one?
Christmas.
I love Christmas food.
What's the difference?
I have casserole.
I guess it's how you sell it. Like, my family is not traditional for Christmas, so we don't have like the traditional Christmas meal. I just don't like Thanksgiving. Is one meal that everyone has kind of the same stuff, and like turkey is in cold cuts on bread, delicious. And when you kill the actual bird and make it in an oven, it's not very good.
Now I'm with you on that. That's not the way to eat turkey.
Yeah.
We're perfectly fine with the turkey we have on Thanksgiving.
I don't love it. It's just kind of like not very
fried good. Turkey is the way to go.
It's like bad chicken, basically. Just make chicken.
Drier.
Chicken's better. I don't like potatoes pretty much in
Doesn't
general.
It feel special, though? You have chicken all the time. We eat like a billion chicken a day in this country.
Yeah, chicken's delicious. That's why we do it. That's why you only make turkey once a year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So what are you having on Christmas is my question.
I don't understand cranberry.
Yeah, hold on.
I want to get into this.
This won't hold up for anyone because our Christmas is very not traditional, like even a little bit. Like we just like kind of make a bunch of snacks and like make sausage sandwiches, like sausage.
And
peppers.
That's better than Thanksgiving
sausage and pepper sandwich. Oh yeah,
Sister Schubert.
Christmas Day we do Mexican because we're you know. A good Jewish.
You can
family.
Have that
and Italian, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Queso.
I
like queso too. I was just saying, you're like Christmas is a better food. I was like, all right, we'll prove that's, it. That's and like, you're like, and you're like, all right, let's name this. It's just a bunch of random stuff.
That's actually what we do. Yeah.
Josh, like, I'm
now, I know people who do that for Thanksgiving. I know people who are just like, we don't like Thanksgiving. We don't like the traditional Thanksgiving foods. So. We're just going to do something different.
Basically.
And I'm fine with that. That's cool. It's all about, Thanksgiving is supposed to be all about getting the family together, you know, all the people you care about, being around
on Christmas.
Right, being around one another. Then you just eat whatever food you think's awesome.
Yeah, our Christmas Eve used to be like Swedish meatballs, queso, empanadas, whatever. Like a bunch of just, people just brought stuff. We just all ate it.
Just turned it in 7-Eleven inside out for Christmas?
And then at midnight, you eat the tzatzas, the sausage sandwich.
I'm a little surprised you guys don't have just sub sandwiches.
The sandwich thing is really a me thing. It's not really my family.
Your family is not in on that?
No, my sister's gluten-free, so she can't even eat
sandwiches. So I have a theory about this, Painter.
Frustrating.
I have a theory about this, Painter. The people who don't like Thanksgiving food, and it's like it's not a good food holiday, is because like you are either from a part of the country where...
You ain't doing it right.
Well, not that. It's just your side dishes are going to suck. Your side dishes are not going to be as good as you get down here.
Mac and cheese for Thanksgiving, it's amazing. It's the only good thing on Thanksgiving. I don't think it's a huge thing up north.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Because my mom also only your started concept making of it. Mac and cheese is different for other places. Like here, you're going to get like the southern mac and cheese. Yeah, it's really good.
But we didn't start doing that. My mom started making that when I was in high school because I didn't like anything else in the place. So she made mac and cheese.
Just some good carbs. Your mother made me feel like a wanted member of society this past Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to her.
Okay.
And moving on.
Yeah, and moving on. So here's the thing that always bugs me. Every year, it's around, I think it's more of a Christmas thing, but you see it at Thanksgiving. You see the commercials, the old Campbell's commercials for like green bean casserole.
With Donovan McNabb's mother.
Green bean casserole. It's a thing that like growing up, like, and you see it on TV, you think people have it. I don't know anyone who eats that.
I have green bean casserole.
Every Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving and sporadically. Yes.
It's delicious. Okay.
Yeah. Have you tried Karen's green bean casserole?
I have not tried Karen's green bean casserole. But I'm sitting there thinking...
Let me pop that in there, see what you think about green bean.
People down here, you're going to get better quality vegetables. You're going to get better quality...
The thing about Thanksgiving is like, all right, here's a holiday. Let's eat a bunch of stuff that we don't eat all year. Just the, see, here's a bunch of weird things.
We're calling green.
Let's make a squash casserole. Let's make sweet. No one eats these things. Like, oh, this time we're eating these things.
I do not eat squash casserole. That is like pretty much the thing I do not eat.
Sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes.
Growing once a year on Thanksgiving.
Really?
Sarah has sweet potatoes like three times a week.
Yeah, sweet potatoes are awesome.
No.
Don't really care for them. I'm big into the mash. The mash is where
Pass.
He doesn't like potatoes, though. That's the problem that we all have.
They're perfect at breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Potatoes are involved, I'm either not ordering it or just asking them to bring them to me.
Yikes. But like,
I could never.
I think your other thing is like, this is it. We eat a bunch of stuff that we don't eat other times of year. I think that's only true for some people. But also, it's like turkey. Yeah, granted, most people aren't cooking turkey most of the year anyway. That's true. But a lot of the other stuff is going to be the sides. Like I feel like you can load up with some good sides. We're gonna go with like sweet potato casserole. We're gonna go mashed potatoes. We're gonna go mac and cheese. We're gonna get some green beans in there. We're gonna get a large variety of things. And I feel like if you have been kept away from that, I feel like that could tilt your opinion of the holiday.
Yeah, we don't eat that a lot.
I know what Dan.
See, I don't think Christmas like, because people think of ham at Christmas. I think ham's overrated.
Oh, the honey baked ham, like the spiral. Oh, that thing is ridiculous. That's one of my favorite parts of Christmas. That's also part of.
What
the
were you
Christmas
saying about
meal.
Dan?
Dan Peck has only one thing he has on Christmas or Thanksgiving.
Pizza, wings, and waffles.
That actually sounds better.
I just got a break. I can't take this anymore.
The Abbey Award-winning Lunch Break. Back to the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390 or toll free 1-888-382-7502.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless, Josh Vitality of the Montgomery Advertiser in studio with us. All right, let's change gears here. Auburn basketball taking on New Mexico tonight at 8:30 on ESPN News, part of the Legends Classic going on in Brooklyn. And to talk more about that and some more college basketball, we'll turn to the Blake Lovell, who covers SEC and college basketball for Clutch Points. Follow him on Twitter at the Blake Lovell. Blake, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Doing well. First off, let's just get it started. It's one of the best times of the year for college basketball. So many great games. We'll kick it off, though, talking about Auburn's game tonight against New Mexico. Auburn, we've talked about it to you the last few weeks. Looking good to start the season. What do you think about the matchup they're going to get with New Mexico? A team so far this season, pretty good wins on their resume. Got one loss to UTEP, but a team that plays really, really quickly.
Yeah, they do, and I mean they play fast. And of course, Auburn fans are no strangers to that. They're used to seeing teams play fast. I mean, because Auburn has, but this team is they're quick, and it's an experienced team that plays fast. They have good size. It is. It's an upperclassman dominated team that has kind of been through this situation. And, Paul Weir, who had all that success, when he was at New Mexico State, of course, that first year he won 28 games there and then took over the job at New Mexico. And really, this is his third year there. And this was kind of the expected turning point for them. They've dealt with injury situations and all that, but now that they've got their full team there, this is sort of what we've expected from the New Mexico teams of the past that have had a lot of success, of course, when Steve Alford was there. So, it's going to be a challenge. I don't think there's any other way to put it. When you talk about, these neutral court type of games anyway, they're always challenged pretty much no matter who you're playing. But this is a team that can give Auburn some trouble just because they do play fast. They do have all this experience. This is one of the most experienced teams in the country. Like I said, you look up and down their roster, everyone is pretty much a junior or senior playing on this roster. It's going to be a challenge for Auburn.
Seems like a very similar test to kind of the games they got a little bit earlier in this year, just combination of them with like maybe a little bit of what you saw from Davidson, a little bit of what you saw from South Alabama for sure. Hey, Blake, what about the other two teams in this Invitational that are going to be opening tonight, Wisconsin and Richmond? Auburn will play one of them tomorrow. What can you tell us about the Badgers and the Spiders and just kind of their potential matchups they might have with Auburn, win or lose tomorrow?
Yeah, well, I think as we know with Wisconsin, they're not going to play fast. They're going to play sort of a slower possession, you know, half-court type of game. That's what they want to play, and that hasn't changed, you know, since Greg Gard took over there. But, I mean, they're playing well. We got to remember, this is a team that pretty much handled, you know, Marquette last week, and they're off to a really good start, and so it is another team that sort of, you know, we talk about teams that aren't going to beat themselves, and that's really been Wisconsin's, you know, MO over the years. They don't beat themselves. They sort of do the things you need to do to win. They'll play good defense. They'll be disciplined on offense. They don't turn it over a ton. They'll make their free throws, all that kind of stuff. So, again, another sort of hard team to prepare for, you know, on that kind of, you know, short sort of notice situation. And Richmond, you know, I watched them play that game against Vanderbilt, probably one of the better games in college basketball thus far this season, which I know a lot of people didn't get to see it, but that 93-92 overtime game they had against Vanderbilt, I guess it was about a week and a half ago now. Richmond can play. I mean, they can shoot it. I think right now they're in the top five in the nation in three-point percentage. They shoot it really well pretty much from everywhere. I mean, and again, their opponents haven't been the strongest, but I still think this is a team that I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Wisconsin just because they do shoot it so well. Another team that does have some experience, not exactly have a ton of size. I think that's something Auburn could exploit if they do play Richmond. But either way, it's going to be, you know, again, a tough matchup either way because you do have these different styles, and that's what makes these tournaments and classics and all that so fun to watch.
Blake Lovell of Clutch Points joining us here talking SEC and college basketball. All right. Let's look at the rest of the league a little bit. I want to ask you about Florida. Gators got off to a slow start of the season, losing to Florida State, losing to UConn. Last three games, though, they beat St. Joe's, crushed Miami, and then they beat Xavier yesterday. What has kind of been the key to turn it around a little bit for Florida? Because they look really sloppy early on, but, I mean, Miami and Xavier on and St. Joe's, three games in 4 days on a neutral floor, that's a pretty good way to go about your business.
Yeah, no, they needed that. I mean, because we saw how bad they were offensively, really, in pretty much all of their first four games, even against North Florida. You know, they didn't score for the first 5 or 6 minutes, I think. They couldn't hit anything. But after that UConn game, it's clear that they started to sort of find something. You know, they didn't look great against St. Joe's, but they found a way to win that game, and they really turned it on against Miami, really turned it on against Xavier. Yeah, I said it was Florida. Look, there's going to be these moments where they're just really frustrating. And this is going to be a team, Mike White's probably excited to coach, but it's going to be frustrating all at the same time because they're so young. And, you know, we're used to the Kentucky sort of theme where you have a team like this that's so young and you expect them to figure it out eventually. Well, it seems like Florida sort of figured out some things here in these past several games. Have they completely figured everything out? No. Do I still think they can get there? Yes, because, again, it's a long season. And I think just these past three games, with the way they're playing defense, seeing their offense start to come along, you feel a little bit better about the Gators in terms of where they were, let's say, you know, a week and a half ago to where they are now. That doesn't mean they're going to win every game until SEC play because they do have some tough matchups still to go in the non-conference. But they're starting to figure some things out, and I think that's all Mike White can probably ask for at this point.
Blake, Georgia getting the Maui treatment this week. I know a lot of people are going to be interested to see Anthony Edwards. Really, really interested to see what Tom Crean does back in Maui. What are you expecting to see from the Bulldogs in their elevated stage this weekend at you know, arguably the most prestigious of these Thanksgiving week tournaments?
Yeah, Georgia's team, I'm still, I guess, having trouble getting a feel on because they haven't played a great schedule. And you know, they played Georgia Tech. They won that game. But before that, I mean, really, I guess Western Carolina's been okay. But a couple other games, they've just scored so many points. I mean, Georgia's averaging so many points right now to where is that going to continue, you know, against the Dayton, against some of these other teams that they're going to play in Maui? And that's what we're going to find out. Are they going to have the same contribution from everyone, you know, not named Anthony Edwards or Rayshon Hammonds that they've had so far? And that's what we find out when they play these types of games against better competition. So we'll know what these young guys are made of because they are playing freshmen and sophomores and, you know, in addition to these other guys that are upperclassmen but maybe not making a huge contribution right now. We knew this was going to be a younger team that was going to be dominated by a lot of playing time for freshmen and sophomores. So how they handle something like this will probably tell us a lot more about whether we can look at Georgia as an NCAA tournament team, or if maybe that youth is going to hold them back. Even if they do, again, you know, have one of the best players in the country in Anthony Edwards. He's looked really good so far, and you would expect him in key situations in Maui. He'll be the guy with the ball in his hands.
Blake Lovell of Clutch Points, follow him on Twitter, at the Blake Lovell, joining us, talking all things college basketball in the SEC with this Auburn matchup. One more SEC team I wanted to ask you before we wrap up with a little bit more Auburn talk. Tennessee, looking good to start the season. They are, I believe, now number 20 in the country, or they're going to be moving up in the poll. Good neutral site win over Washington. They play Chattanooga tonight, but they get Florida State later this week. Another neutral site game. How impressive have you been with Tennessee? Because much like Auburn, some guys coming back, some newness, having to adjust to new roles, but have gone off and really done their job in the first few games of the season.
Yeah, no, they have. And as I said, I mean, I told a lot of people last week that, at least at this point, I think Auburn and Tennessee are the two best teams in the SEC. It just seems like they're meshing better than anyone else. And, yeah, Florida coming along this weekend probably helps them a little bit. I think Kentucky still has things to work out, but we know they'll be there come February and March. But, yeah, well, if you look at, you know, Tennessee, it's just we knew what we were going to get from Tennessee. We knew Lamonte Turner and Jordan Bowden were going to be the guys that led things. My biggest hesitation with Tennessee was, well, what are you going to get elsewhere? Because you don't have Grant Williams or Admiral Schofield or Kyle Alexander, Jordan Bone. Who's going to step up? And it was a matter of, are, you know, East Pons and John Fulkerson going to step up? Well, the answer so far has been yes. I mean, they have both played really well, and that's a big positive for Rick Barnes, because he can get what he's getting from those two right now. I think Tennessee is not going anywhere. They're going to be right there in the SEC title race. I'm feeling really good about themselves once they get to March because, again, their nucleus is pretty strong when you think about those two guards, Turner and Bowden, who've been through this and had all the success they've had. If they can just keep getting what they're getting from Pons and Fulkerson, I think Josiah Jordan James, he hasn't had the best start, but he'll get there. He's a freshman. He's really talented. He'll get there. But Tennessee's not going anywhere. If they can get these kind of role players from last year looking like, key contributors now, they're going to be just fine.
Blake, we've been careful, and you've done the same when we've had you on, to not read too much into the first few weeks of college basketball. Auburn fans in particular found out just how long of a season it can be last year. Over the next few weeks, though, as the non-conference schedule continues to unfold, what are you watching most until we get to conference play? Is there a team, a set of players or a conference? What will you be paying the most attention to as teams shore some things up heading into conference play?
Yeah, I think that's what the biggest thing is to me. You know, how do teams start to fix some of these issues we've seen early on? And like we said with Florida, I mean, they've at least started to do that. They're finding more ways on offense to get better. It's going to be the same with all these teams. Like even with Auburn and Tennessee, like I said, if I feel like they're the two best teams, they're still two teams, you know, that have to get some things figured out before they get to SEC play. But that's what it's all about. I mean, we know now, guys, and you know this, is that there just aren't a lot of games. The overall non-conference schedule has gotten so much tougher for every single team just because, you know, it's mandate now. You have to schedule tougher. And so we're going to start seeing some of these games, especially this week, where we really find out a lot more about these teams. And if they're able to string together wins in a tournament setting, you feel a lot better about their chances. You know, there are still other undefeated teams like Arkansas. We mentioned Georgia. I know Ole Miss just lost. Mississippi State 6-1. But those are teams that still feel like they can all make the NCAA tournament. So maybe we start to decide, okay, who's for real and who's not once we start to step up this non-conference competition with these tournaments and stuff. I think that's what we look at the most here over the next couple weeks.
Blake, who's the most exciting team to watch in the conference Ooh. This year? Doesn't necessarily have to be the best team. Might not be the team you think is going to win the league.
Well, I mean, look, I'll always default back to Auburn because, you know, I'm not going to go against you guys. But it's just, you know, we were laughing before the season started. We kept talking about how Bruce Brown kept saying, you know, well, we're going to play slower and we're going to slow it. That's not happening. I mean, they're still getting up down the court, and Samir Dowdy's been so fun to watch. You got to put Auburn right there at the top, and if not them, I really think you probably look at Arkansas because Arkansas is just got these guards are so good, and their schedule hasn't been the greatest either, but when you have four or five guards that Musk can put out there at any time, and they can just take over games, they're not shooting it great from outside, but they're just so fun to watch. For me, Auburn and Arkansas are doing pretty well.
Blake Lovell of Clutch Points joining us here on the lunch break. Blake, you got a lot of stuff going on. This is a huge time of year for you, especially with all these games going on. We've got college basketball going on all day for like the next 2 weeks. It's amazing. Tell everybody where they can read your stuff and keep up with you with your podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate that, guys. The best way, I guess, to find everything is on Twitter at the Blake Lovell. That's where I share all the podcasts, Marching to Madness, and the stuff at Clutch Points, all the written stuff. So you can find all that there. But yeah, this is one of the most exciting times for college basketball fans. So many games. You got games on during the day, tournaments. It's a lot of fun.
Blake, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you again very soon. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Blake.
Thanks, guys. Always enjoy it.
All right, let's get a break. When we come back, what's on tonight? We wrap up Monday's edition of The Lunch Break.
This is the Abby Award-winning Lunch Break.
Welcome back to The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Josh Vitale, the Montgomery Advertiser. Joshua, tell the folks at home what they can find at the Montgomery Advertiser this week.
This morning I wrote a very long story about the 1989 Iron Bowl, which was the first one ever played at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
This you might is have
the
heard of it.
30-year anniversary of that game.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who was not alive during that game, as David Housel pointed out to me during our phone interview, I'm sure many of you know this, that game was wild.
Yep.
So
a religious experience, almost.
That's what it seems like from the people I spoke to. Again, I was not alive during that game, so I could not tell you anything about it from a personal standpoint. But
I mean, you couldn't tell us anything about the 2010 Iron Bowl.
As far as experience, no.
No?
No.
So, it's okay.
I was on my couch in Connecticut.
Yeah. Were you watching?
Yeah. I always watch the Iron Bowl. It's a good game.
Oh, fair enough.
Fair enough. So, yeah, check out Josh's story on the 89 Iron Bowl. It's always always good to take the old walk down memory lane, or for those of us who weren't alive during that game, some of the stories from that one. It's such a big one in Auburn history, and Josh does a good job of telling that story. So check it out at the Montgomery Advertiser. What else are we looking at this week getting ready for the Iron Bowl, Josh?
Oh, you know, stuff.
Stuff. Got anything big coming up?
Nothing big. That was the big story today. Mm-hmm. But, you know, talk about Bo Nix. Got to talk about Auburn's secondary versus a very good crew of Alabama wide receivers.
Yeah.
What are we going to see from Mac Jones? I don't think anyone knows the answer to that question.
Nope.
It's Iron Bowl week, man. It's a big game.
Painter?
Yes.
What can people find on your Twitter account if they go to it?
Tremendous content.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys love interacting with me on the Twitter.com. And I'll be there.
Well, yeah, I came up with a thing last night that I thought in retirement Painter would be a great snow cone, a guy who runs the snow cone.
Bit of a
check.
Curmudgeon.
I think it could work.
No. This guy, see, the guy I was comparing you to, this guy's very friendly. Always, you know, it seems like he was always real happy that people were coming by and stopping by to see him. He was always very nice.
The place that the kids are leaving high school and going because they love the guy so much. They want to go buy a snow cone and hang out in the parking lot.
He wraps a napkin around the snow cone, doesn't he? Very, to make sure it doesn't drip.
Very, very, very nice. You know, can be very very friendly to the little kids without being creepy, which is a fine balance you have to strike.
You want to strike it,
yeah. And I think Painter would be like, I could see 65-year-old Painter just slinging snow cones.
You know, if that's the way life goes, as it just gets hotter and hotter each year, then I'll be okay with it.
I could see Painter getting like really intricate with the diesel, like when people want the two different flavors, if they want it swirl or half and half. Painter's up there just like making sure all the flavors are coming together correctly.
An Aziz Ansari Parks and Recreation like demeanor to this guy in the snow cone vehicle or shack.
Mm-hmm. It was like a building that was probably the size of his desk.
That's fair. You don't need a ton of room to make delicious snow cones.
Not a lot of overhead either.
And feed the youths.
You just
it's
have,
ice.
Got to have an ice machine.
And sugar. Two things
a
we
lot
like.
A lot of sugar water.
Yeah, what is the best occupation to have when you've retired? Because a lot of people don't like to sit around, right? That's one thing about being retired.
Josh has his answer.
People get restless.
Golf course ranger.
Oh, wow.
Or, or a starter.
So, yeah. So
well, the starter is the guy who checks your receipt, handles things on the first tee. The ranger is the guy who just kind of rides around the course and makes sure there's no slow play, make sure.
And see, I think that's job suited for you because you just kind of keep things moving, brief interactions.
And if you're good at it, you go up to the groups who are waiting in the tee, you talk to them, you have a good time. It's, you know, it'd be a fun job. I would very much, I would love to do it now.
Justin,
I would love to be retired at 28 and just be a golf course ranger.
I keep hearing about people retiring and then they don't know what to do with themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I
don't know what it would be for me. Like, I don't have an answer.
I would be, if I stopped working and then if I stopped working, like, I would be very excited for one day and the second day be like, God, what do I do with my time now?
See, I'd
be
so bored. I don't think I would do that. I think I would go skiing every day.
I'd be bored so fast.
And, until it became the summer. And on that note, it's time for What's On Tonight.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
All right, ESPN 715. We start with the Ravens and the Rams. Lamar. National TV. I hope Lamar balls out tonight.
There's really no reason to think he won't, right? I mean, like,
Rams defense is okay. Like, it's pretty good. It has good tendencies. I mean, Aaron Donald is a tough guy to block.
There are good individuals on
Jalen
the Rams.
Ramsey is a very good player.
Yes.
My thing is, like, the Ravens have got a good defense, and, like, I don't know if the Rams are going to be able to put up a ton. I don't want this to be a low scoring game, but I feel like it could be.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Rams. Yeah, but the Rams can't score. It's weird. They have a ton of weapons on offense. They can't score.
They do. College basketball, a lot of it. Here we go. ESPN 2, 130, Georgia and Dayton.
Dayton.
Anthony Edwards in Maui. Tom Crean in Maui.
Met some Dayton fans when they came to town last year. Really good
the
fan
Flyers.
Base. Enjoyed it a lot.
They love their basketball up there.
Were they in, how far away from Cincy is
not too far.
Dayton? Because there's like a pretty decent hub of, what, you got Xavier, Cincy itself, Dayton.
Of course, Ohio State.
Ohio State's had their years where they've been very talented.
Yeah, Ohio's got some basketball talent for sure. 4 o'clock, number 3, Michigan State taking on Virginia Tech. FS1 at 5, Pittsburgh and Kansas State. Big Ten Network at 5:30, number 10, Ohio State and Kent State. Let's say, watch out for Ohio State. Like, they're a really, really good basketball team this year. I don't think it's getting a ton of attention despite their ranking. SEC Network at 6 o'clock night, number 20 Tennessee taking on Chattanooga. Like we were talking with Blake just a second in the last segment, Auburn and Tennessee looking like the best teams in the SEC to start the year. Chattanooga's got this one. They play Chattanooga this weekend or tonight, and then this weekend they play Florida State, which could be a really fun game later on. Missouri and Butler, some more SEC action. ESPNU at 6. ESPN2 at 6, the first game of the Legends Classic that Auburn will be playing one of these teams tomorrow. So is Richmond and Wisconsin.
So a serious question. I know you don't like watching Wisconsin, but from a talent standpoint,
we're a good team.
Do you think it would be better for them to play Wisconsin? I know you don't want to watch it from an entertainment standpoint, but for Auburn's
Richmond's
sake,
really good. Richmond's really good. I think either one would be a
indifferent.
Challenge. Yeah.
Indifferent. All right.
ACC Network at 6. You can watch that Arkansas defense. Isaiah Joe's been putting up a ton of points from deep this year. They take on a delightfully sporadic Georgia Tech basketball team where it's just you have no idea what they're going to do. FS1 at 7:30 tonight. Bradley taking on Northwestern. Will Northwestern lose to another team that sounds like a person?
They've lost some weird games.
To Merrimack and Radford.
I jump on
Bradley
that.
Bradley could get them this week.
I jumped on that bandwagon a year too early, I guess. Or too late, depending on how you're looking at it. They're just awful. And anyway.
Pretty much everything.
Yeah. All right.
Not Big Ten Network. ESPNU at 8. Number 4, Kansas taking on Chaminade, the Silver Swords, in their host game in Maui. ESPN News at 8:30, the big one, number 19, Auburn and New Mexico. Final thoughts on this game, gentlemen. I think Auburn It's going to be another game like Davidson. It's going to be another game like South Alabama. It's going to be another game maybe some pieces of Georgia Southern thrown in there.
Feels like a game that they should win, that they could lose, and if they lose it, fans will spend too much time wringing their hands about it.
But I think it's also a good game because, like, the names Auburn has played in non-conference aren't big names, but these have been good games that this mm-hmm. team kind of needs to play.
And New Mexico is traditionally a good mid-major.
They're going to start four transfers from other D1 programs, a lot of veterans. Like, this is what,
like, fast.
Yeah, this is what Bruce Pearl's been saying. Auburn has really good talent.
Let's get you ready for March.
But Auburn has good talent. These guys have not been on the floor. A lot of these guys have not been on the floor late in games to close out close games. If you're playing that South Alabama game, this one, if it's close,
don't miss a bowl game this year.
Yeah, we've gotten used to them being not only relevant nationally, but being a team that's on the fringe of the playoff. Yeah, I mean, they're just not good this year. So we'll see. Michigan State, I'll be fascinated to see what they do with their coach, but
This could be D'Antonio retiring and hanging it up.
Might be that time. But, you know, they had a, 3-9 season a few years ago, and they did bounce back. So we'll see what Shaw can do.
ESPN2 at 10:30, BYU-UCLA in action. And then no House Hunters International night, but the Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick of the evening.
RIP Dan.
The U.S. gymnastics scandal documentary, At the Heart of Gold. It is a...
not light, but good to watch.
It's very important and very, very well done story that you want to check out for sure.
Also, it does, I think, in some ways impact sports broadly. Y'all may have seen this. John Carvalho, friend of the program, sent out a tweet. The Auburn Board of Trustees announced a faculty meeting December 3rd to discuss removing the interim designation from Dr. Jay Gouge's title of interim president. Gouge said he would do it only with faculty support. Reasons behind the proposal will be explained. So we will see.
He might be one of the most well-liked people who've had power at Auburn in a long time. So.
And they're trying to reverse course from that Stephen Leith 2 years of that it seemed no one enjoyed.
Absolutely. All right, that'll do it for today's show. Follow me on Twitter at Jay Ferguson. You follow him on Twitter at Josh Vitale. Follow him on Twitter at Paint Sharpless Painter.
Josh, thanks for joining us. Justin and Josh will be with Gus tomorrow, so Michael Pappas joins me. Until then, keep it toasty.